Tango Tango Papa 1809, December 30th, 2013.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Springfield, Missouri. So I've been on vacation for the past, number of days. And so today I came back to work, and so they ended up sending a load that I picked up this evening. It was a drop and hook. I picked it up at Springdale, Arkansas, which isn't too far from where I live. And it was all ready to go whenever I got there. And so I did a drop and hook. And it's a short load. It delivers here at Springfield, Missouri at 4 a.m. And so I'm parked out on the street, on the edge of the street, with some other trucks out in front of the place. It's a kind of a large grocery warehouse, and so I'll be probably checking in with them probably sometime just before four. And and then of course I have no clue at this point. Won't know until sometime in the morning where I will be headed for next after this. But I am back at work, and that's the way the world works. So, enjoyed my time off. I spent the vast majority of it with my parents, and a lot of that, we did have some family dinners and what have you, and, kind of not only at my house, but we also had some other dinners, kind of eating out in various places. And again, I like to, I've done this the past probably 3 years or 4 years anyway. Try to, spend my vacation, I guess probably the past three really, spend my entire vacation with my parents. And they're not getting any younger. My dad just turned 80, and my mom's birthday is January 2nd. She'll be 89. Now, if you were to meet her, you would probably never suspect that she was 89 years old. she's just one of those people that is very active and on top of things and so on and so forth, and for that age, moves around probably as well as someone at least 20 to maybe 30 years younger. And so that's, there are some people that are just like that, and she's one of them. So, in any case, I ended up giving my parents, I had an iPad 2, because, when I was home the last time, I think it was the last time maybe, whenever the iPad Air came out, I did end up going ahead and buying an iPad Air for myself. So I ended up with the iPad 2. So I really couldn't get very much money out of it. I could have sold it maybe for about $175, gazelle.com. And so I figured it was just worth hanging on to. And so I did go ahead and give it to them, and they're pretty happy with it. Of course, they're used to using, for a year now, they've been using their Amazon Kindle, which they, they became pretty familiar with it, and they're still using that, of course. And then they've also got the original Nook Color that I bought. It's been some time ago now, and they're still using that. And so they've got those three devices, And that should work out pretty well, because the iPad is not that dissimilar from, despite what the iOS people would say, it's not that dissimilar, you know, in the way it functions. It's not that dissimilar from Android. There's some differences, and so the iPad is pretty simple and straightforward. And I will say that the iPad's got some of the apps are visually sort of work better than their Android counterparts. But so they're using all three of those devices. They spend a good chunk of time on them during the day, and so between all of them, keeping the batteries charged up, they should be able to have a couple of the devices available at any given point, there they are, you know, on their mobile devices. So I'm glad I kept that and gave it to them, and they're going to get some pretty good use out of it. So, and I will say, you know, the iPad, of course, has a pretty good battery life. It does have a better battery life than, say, that Kindle, that Kindle Fire that they have. You know, of course, you know, they've had it for about a year, so it was the original Kindle Fire HD that they have, the 7-inch. And it will probably go about 5 to 6 hours, but the iPad will probably go about 10 hours. And so I made sure that they knew how to charge it and make sure it was on the right network and so on and so forth. And since they were already familiar with the Amazon Kindle and sort of how it works, it's really been easy for them to sort of learn how the iPad works. So they are pretty happy with that, and I'm kind of glad that I had that and that I gave it to them. So, did give that to them, and so now I'm down to just one iPad again, iPad Air, and I'm pretty happy with it for what I use it for. And so, but these mobile devices really have made a huge dent in the way people interact really with the internet. They really kind of changed that. So, and that's going to continue to happen as the bandwidth improves, as it inevitably does. The bandwidth gets better and things get better, and that is going to continue to sort of evolve and sort of continue to rapidly undermine previous devices. And what it's really undermining at this point is the traditional computer. The traditional computer is really, people aren't using those as much. And it was pretty interesting. My mom hadn't used her laptop in a while, so she went ahead and plugged it in, and she was on it a little bit. And it was pretty interesting because she caught herself trying to, it's kind of funny, she caught herself trying to touch the screen. And I think most people have probably experienced that. If once you've used any kind of a tablet, a modern tablet or smartphone for a while, and you've gotten used to doing that, touching the screen, you'll catch yourself sometimes if you go back to a laptop, you will catch yourself, and I know I've done it once or twice, trying to touch something on the laptop screen to get it to respond, and of course, can't do that. You've got to use the trackpad and the cursor. So, in any case, I have a voice file that was sent by Michael. On Voxer, then I'm on it. It's kind of about 5 minutes, roughly about 5 minutes, 30 seconds that I'm going to play, where he's kind of commenting or responding. He's sort of responding to a prior podcast, and I listened to just the very first part of it. He's talking about robots and what have you. So let's go ahead and play that, and I may end up doing a stop start on this. So here is Michael.
Hey Tom. Hey, I just listened to your last podcast there about automation. Joel, I think is his name, brought up some observations and thoughts on the subject of robotics and computers replacing people and banking and whatnot. And my bank, which is a small regional bank, they have automated, I guess you'd call them ATM machines. They're much more elaborate than a old-fashioned ATM machine. I can deposit checks and do pretty much all the banking I would ever need to do, and there's no human element at all. Everything's totally automated, and it seems to work pretty well. I have in the last couple of years since they've installed those machines, I've never gone into a lobby and actually dealt with the human, you know.
Let me go ahead and interrupt. A thought just kind of popped into my head as you were talking about, well, there's no human element. Actually, there is a human element. You, as the user, are the human element. And so if the software and its interface is done properly, it takes advantage of the way you, as the human element, work. And that's not only true with computers and software, but it's true with other things. While I was home, I ended up, I think it was on, was it Friday? I think it was Friday. Friday, I had my annual eye appointment. And so I, went in for my annual, it's kind of an eye, and of course I wear contact lenses, so I went in and, got some new contacts and what have you. Along with it, I don't know that I would go, if I was just wearing glasses, I don't know that I would go once a year. It might be a good idea, but certainly if you're wearing contact lenses like I have for many years, it is a good idea to go in and get those, get your eyes checked and make sure everything's fine. And with me, my prescription has been changing over the past number of years. It's kind of because I've been nearsighted, and as you age, and I've described this many times before, but as you age, your eyes shrink, your eyeballs shrink somewhat, and if you're nearsighted, the nearsightedness actually improves. And that's why you would never want to get LASIK, any kind of laser vision correction, by the way, for the average person. Now, maybe someone that had an extreme case of myopia or nearsightedness, that might be a different story. But the average person, I was -3, I think, at one point, because I was using the computer too much, I was -4. I think I got to -4.25 in one eye. And then after I came back to driving a truck, that happened about over 10 years ago when I was working in that eye clinic. When I came back to driving the truck, then it reversed and it went back to -3 and -3.25. But then it continued to improve. And so now my eyes, actually one of my eyes is now down to -1.25, or might be one. I'd have to actually look at the contact lenses, but it actually got better. I think I was -2. More recently, I could probably grab those and look, and I might do that in a minute. So in any case, they have this machine. My optometrist has this machine that, and probably most people, if you've gone to an eye doctor or any kind of optometrist, they're going to do a glaucoma test, where they test the pressure in your eye. And so the way they do that, they've got this machine that, blows a sudden puff of air into your eye and it has to be very close to your eye in order to measure. They get it very, very close, and then it releases the sudden puff of air, And then it, you know, it's measuring back. Then it's actually able to measure the eye pressure, or you know what the pressure is in your eye. And of course, glaucoma. The test for glaucoma is if you've got a high eye pressure. You know, if it's higher than it should be, and it can cause damage. So they test that. Well, this particular machine that my optometrist has isn't designed all that well, because I have a terrible time. Because it gets so close, it's kind of touching my eyelashes, and it I have a terrible time keeping my eye open. And then whenever they do release the puff of air, my eye, the reflex is fast enough where it actually shuts and sort of prevents that machine from functioning right. And so that's a case of the machine isn't designed with the human element really well, you know, really in mind that well. And so now what he's done, he's got this, if they can't get that machine to work, and they virtually never can with me, it's really, they have to really try, and it's really a struggle to get that thing to work right with my eyes. He's got this handheld one that he's able to do, and he was actually able, it was still a bit of a struggle, but it did work. It would work. So that machine, I got to thinking about that. That particular machine just is not designed well. So therefore, it's not designed well with the human element in mind. So there is a human element. You are the human element. I go to the app on my phone for my bank. That's pretty well designed. But even though I'm interacting with the machine and its database, thing is designed well enough where it's easy for me as the human element to sort of manipulate it, and basically I'm interacting with the database is what I'm really doing. So there is a human element. We are the human element.
I just use those machines, but they work out well for me because being a truck driver, I work odd hours, so it's really a great convenience. I listen to Bloomberg a lot. I find business news to be pretty interesting, and I think a lot of what's going on, based on what I hear, is to use the banks as an example with this automation. It's all about the balance sheet. It's all about making the bank more profitable. One of the biggest, overheads that a bank has is, human resources, employees and banks and many other industries are working hard to automate wherever they can in order to save money to, be more profitable.
Let me interrupt once again. Not only more profitable, but more efficient and more pleasant. Let's admit it. These mobile banking apps, while they may be getting rid of a lot of the work that you'd have, let's say, but prior to computers, of course, everything had to be done by hand. And there was no such thing as a mobile banking app. That was, and certainly way before the internet. Banks for many years, banks have had computers, different types of computers that sort of have handled a lot of this stuff. And then you sort of, for probably the majority of my life, certainly, banks have had computers of various kinds, and of course they've evolved over the years. But you'd go into the bank, and the bank person would be that you'd go in to see if you were, you had bank by mail, of course, which I did that for years and years. You have the bank by mail, or you go in person, and the person is there, kind of interacting with the computer database. And, you know, so you kind of have, two human elements. You have you as the customer, and then the teller is the other element. But the teller's function, and it still is, you still have tellers in banks. If I have a reason to go into my local bank, then they have some people, they have about two or three people working in there, and they can all do teller work, and so they are interacting directly with the bank's computer. But I can, you know, they've made it more convenient for the customer, because I can do that. If I just need to transfer money, or, you know, now a lot of the banks will even allow you to deposit checks. Very rarely do I actually receive a check anymore. It's pretty few and far between. And on the past couple of years, very, very few checks do I actually physically receive. But in many cases, you can, depending on the bank, you can deposit the checks with your smartphone simply by taking a picture of the check, and then it gets deposited to your account somehow. I'm not exactly sure on how they work that, but it does work. Sounds a little flaky to people, but apparently they have worked the system out, and that's been around for a couple of years anyway. So, but I can transfer money, and I can do all kinds of things, check my balance, make sure the paycheck deposit got in there, and check and see what's cleared, what's come out of the account, check the balance, etc., etc. And so that automation has really made it, you know, convenient for the customer. You can do it from wherever. You've got your phone. Your phone has a data connection. You open up the app and you log in, and there's your account. All the information you need. And if you need to transfer money or just look things over or whatever, it's all right there in front of you. And you can do a lot of that right there. That otherwise you would have, if you were, let's say you were traveling, you would have had to do the bank by mail thing. And as I say, I used to do that. For years I did that. So I had a bank, for years I had this bank in, it was northwestern Kansas, at this little town in northwestern Kansas. And so I, interacted with that bank they only had the one location, and I had moved off away, and I kept that bank, even though I was in a different town several hundred miles away, still in Kansas, but, quite a ways away from that bank, I could still interact with them through the mail. And so I did that for a number of years. So, and of course nowadays, because I don't have, unless I need to go to the bank and maybe get cash out or something, or in the rare case that I do receive a check from somewhere that I need to deposit, I can go into the bank once in a while. I do have a reason to go in there and interact directly with the people that are working there, and as I say, in a branch there, they've got I think probably a total of about four people, maybe, I'm not exactly sure, but probably about four people, maybe five at the most, that work in that branch, and they're all very familiar with the people in the community, and so as soon as I walk in there, they'll greet me by name and so on and so forth, and they're super friendly. And that's as they should be, because that's part of the function of having a branch there. If you're going to have a branch, as opposed to just an ATM, if you're going to have a branch, then the people that are in there should be super friendly and know the names and like to deal, you know, interact directly with people. So there is a kind of a human element, but I would say that the people that are working there, just kind of putting myself in their place, I would say, without asking them, but I would say that they are probably pretty happy that people are able to just open up those apps, or, you know, and prior to that, just the website, but people are able to deal with that database directly, rather than, you know, someone coming in and I want to know what my balance is and so on and so forth. They probably don't really want to deal with that. They want to deal with, because they want to deal with, they've got enough customers walking in there, walk-in customers that are, that have business to conduct, that they're probably pretty happy that people are able to do that. Or if you want to do what my mom does, she likes the bank by phone thing where she'll call the bank up. And most banks also have that because it's the same computer system. You call up and you go through this voice menu system. And you have, you can find out your balance and you can, I don't know, I've never really used a system like that, even though my bank has it, certainly. But you could probably even transfer funds. I don't know if you can do that or not. And I don't know if they'll let you do pay your bills by phone. They probably do that as well. So, but I think that the people that work there are probably happy to do that, because otherwise, especially from the app standpoint or the online banking standpoint, you would probably be doing that via mail, especially if you're traveling. But I would think that the people that are actually working in there are happy because it just, it relieves their workload and it allows them to do other things, and it results in happier customers because they're able to just get right on there and there it is, and they're able to interact with it directly and don't have to make a trip in there, you know, kind of an unnecessary trip. So I don't know, the online banking thing is really a, that's really one of the best things that has evolved over the past several years, and especially so with the smartphone apps.
And so that's kind of been my observation. And another thing on that same point that I thought was kind of interesting is there was a book that was recently released by an economist. His name's Tyler Cohen. And the title of the book is Average is Over. And some of the concerns that Joel brought up, this economist more or less kind of has the same thoughts on the subject, is, you know, that there's going to be, you know, that technology, robotics, and things of that nature are going to displace workers, according to him. It's not a question of if, but, you know, more or less when. And it's actually, once again, according to these economists, it's already happening. That's kind of why the unemployment numbers have been so sticky, is because businesses are, you know, more and more turning to automation, as, you know, instead of hiring people, you know, as this technology gets more and more advanced, you know, companies just don't need to hire people, you know, to do a lot of work. And I actually listened to an interview on On Point. It's an NPR interview show, and the author of the book I mentioned earlier, Tyler Cohen, was on, and he was, of course, talking about his book, whatever. And there was a couple other economists that came on, you know, and, you know, of various political persuasions, and they all kind of agreed that you know, that the humans being displaced by technology is going to happen. It is happening. It's going to happen at a more accelerated pace. They really weren't arguing that. They were more arguing, you know, what we as a society can do to, you know, address the adverse effects that it's going to have on, according to them, a fairly large portion of our population, you know. Anyways, very interesting topic. I've been following it, you know, since that book was released, you know, listening to the various interviews and whatnot, I think you might find it interesting if you ever get a chance. I don't know if they have that book on Audible or not. I'm going to look it up myself, and hopefully it's on there, because I certainly, you know, would like to read it or hear it firsthand. Like I say, I've listened to a lot of interviews about the book and the author or whatever, but haven't actually consume the content firsthand. So anyway, hope everything's going well with you, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right, well, thank you very much for the comment. I remember I saw, I don't know if it was the On Point, the NPR show you're talking about, I think it might have been where they were interviewing him, but I have heard of that guy, and I had heard of the book, and so you've kind of jogged my memory. So I'm going to try to see if I can look that up, and because it is an interesting topic. So, but what we have to keep in mind is that, you know, and I go back to this again, you know, take the money part out of the equation, because money is simply a medium of exchange. You have... you know, and I'll try to state it in a different way. You have a gigantic pile that, you know, people are contributing to. You have people that are producing goods and services. People in combination with machines to make them more productive. They're producing the big pile. You know, like a think of it as a big mountain that they keep adding stuff to, and we're all taking away from it. Or you could think of it. You could think of it as a pot, and so we're all kind of contributing things to the pot. You know, our various goods and services, we're contributing that to the pot, but yet here we're all kind of taking out of it. We all end up consuming the stuff, the various goods and services that either directly or indirectly, that sort of go into that pot or into that mountain. And so, therefore, if the more you can increase productivity, it makes the price of whatever it is that's being produced, it makes it cheaper. It makes it more affordable. And the bigger the mountain, or the bigger the pile of stuff that goes into the pot versus how much is actually taken back out, the more people that you get producing goods and services, and the higher the productivity that kind of combines with it to make a bigger pot, the better all of our overall lifestyles are. Now, you know, and then you still have, you know, of course, you still have the medium of exchange, and you can have distortions. You can certainly have some distortions there with that medium of exchange, but then you also have a lot of people in our society have kind of been, for whatever reason, usually starting with their parents and then kind of encouraged by some of the forces that are in our society, encourage them to kind of be dysfunctional, and they don't really produce. So, you know, and there's various reasons for that. Some of it's legitimate. You know, some people are retired and some people are disabled and so on and so forth, and they can't produce anything. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that we should just let them, ridicule them or let them starve to death or whatever. Not at all. But some of that's legitimate. But we have encouraged a lot of people to, there's been a lot of sloth. Just, that's a good word. There's been a lot of sloth that has kind of been encouraged. And for various reasons. And so there are people that could be producing things that have been, you know, for various reasons, they've sort of been discouraged from it. And so that kind of figures into it too. So but again, it's not, this is an interesting thing to kind of talk about and think about. But I would go back, the real root of our problem is not automation. The real root of our problem is not technology. The real root of our problem as a society is our moral problem. And our morals have gone right into the toilet. For a huge, huge percentage of us, our morals have just gone right into the garbage. And we've got all kinds of problems, social problems, as a result. And there's no amount of, there's no law you can pass. There's no, you know, kind of social tinkering that you can do. The, you know, the sort of external social tinkering that you're going to be able to fix this problem. It's not fixable. Other than we come back to being, you know, we come back to our morals. And the really, the only real way that that can happen, you have to be motivated as an individual. I have to be motivated as an individual. And in order for that to happen, oftentimes, you've got to hit bottom. You got to find yourself in a gutter, either literally or figuratively. You find yourself in the gutter, nowhere else you can go. Then you, some people can start thinking rationally at that point. So, and that's some, you know, a good number of people are going to, if this is going to turn around, if we are going to have some sort of a moral revival that's meaningful, on a kind of a big enough scale to make a difference, if that happens, it's going to have to, there's going to have to be a bunch of people that really hit rock bottom and are going to have to start thinking rationally again. And that doesn't mean that you're going to get rid of your problems. You begin to, you know, if you can begin to as an individual, you know, you hit kind of hit rock bottom and you begin to really face your problems, you know, kind of face reality, then it is possible to begin to turn things around, you know, individually, and then that's going to have, you know, then it has a group effect. But we're, you know, for years and years and years, we've been going in the absolute wrong direction from a moral standpoint, and we're reaping what we sow, what we've sown as a society. So, but there are certain things certainly that will end up being that are. It is possible to automate, and there are other things that currently are not possible to automate, but they might be possible to automate if you have other automation in place. Then, you know, as the technology, as things change, as the technology improves, as things get better, as knowledge improves and technical knowledge improves, technology, technological devices suddenly become possible that weren't possible before, as this stuff evolves, then there are certainly, there are jobs that people have now that could be automated away. So, it's, I don't know, some of it can work and some of it really can't work. Okay, so kind of along these lines of sort of automation, and I'm going to play a case. Michael, or not Michael, Mark, get my name straight here. Mark sent me a thing on Facebook, you know, a link to, and I hadn't really heard of these, but I guess Time Magazine had published this thing about, you know, the kind of like this on, you know, sort of a robot or sort of a computerized version of a telemarketer, or so-called robot telemarketer. But it is a computer, you know, that's using voice recognition. And so I found these, there's a couple of videos on YouTube of a couple of different examples that you, and if you dig around, all you have to do is, if you dig around a little bit, use the search term freakishly realistic robots, you'll find it. And you'll even find the number where you can call it yourself, But in any case, I found these because of Mark sending me this link on YouTube, you know, to YouTube, and then this article about it. I found these videos, and so I've got two different ones, and they're both less than 2 minutes each. And so I'm going to start with this first one. And the voice, it's a female voice that's talking, and it sounds pretty realistic. You know, they make those voices sound pretty realistic anymore. But if you know what to listen for, you can tell that there's a delay, even though our voice recognition's gotten very good. You know, they use these big computers to get this voice right. It still doesn't work right, and it still... It's makes my point that no matter how they try to make the thing work, there is nothing there. It's simply a sophisticated instruction set. And so at this point, the sophisticated instruction set is not even good enough to make a good telemarketer. So even the lowly job of telemarketing cannot yet be automated. So let's go ahead and listen to this. This is pretty interesting.
Hey. Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm calling about an online request you once made about health insurance coverage.
Okay.
I work with all major companies and compare...
Hey, are you a robot?
What? No, I am a real person. Maybe we have a bad connection. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's crazy. You just sound so much like a robot.
I am a real person. Maybe we have a bad connection. I'm sorry about that.
Will you tell me you're not a robot? Just say I'm not a robot, please.
I am a real person.
I mean, I believe you, but will you just say I'm not a robot? It'll make me feel better to hear you say it.
There is a live person here.
But I know there is. It would just make me feel so much better to hear you say I am not a robot.
What?
If you could say the words, I'm not a robot, it would really mean a lot to me.
I am a real person. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. I just want to hear you say, I am not a robot.
Yes, I'm a real person.
Right, but will you say I'm not a robot?
Health Enrollment Center? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. Are you currently on Medicare?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
But now let me ask you a question.
Are you on Medicaid or looking for Medicaid?
We'll go, you ask me a question, then I'll ask you a question. How about that?
Sure.
Okay, are you a robot?
No.
Will you say I'm not a robot?
Okay, so that's the end of the first... video, and you can kind of tell if you listen the way the words are structured, it sort of says the same things, it sort of says them in the same way, and then you have this long kind of a delay as the thing is kind of confused. It's not getting the input that it wants. And so I have a second version of this. Someone else has called this number, and you get exactly the same words from the other end. It's pretty interesting. So let's listen to the second version of this.
Hello, how are you today?
Okay, how are you?
Good. Well, I'm calling about an online request you once made about health insurance coverage. We work with all major companies and compare all the rates for you. I can get you a quote in about 5 minutes, okay?
Are you a robot?
I am a real person. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine, but you sound like a robot.
I understand. Can we continue?
Sure.
Are you currently on Medicare?
No. Why are the questions so personal?
We received your online application for health insurance, and if you're still looking for affordable health insurance with excellent coverage, we can give you a free quote.
Why should I give my information to you?
I understand, but we do work with all carriers, and I can get you a low rate. Getting a quote will only take a minute, okay?
You really do sound like a robot.
I am a real person. Maybe we have a bad connection. I'm sorry about that.
Are you sure?
Yes. Sure.
I'm gonna hang up now.
Okay.
Have a nice day.
Thank you.
All right, so... That is pretty funny. Now, in that first call, it sounded like, at one point, it sounded like there was an actual person. I heard a voice saying supervisor or something like that, and that sounded real. But that was just, it was just kind of briefly in there. I don't know what that was about. But you heard the thing as it got confused. You know, because basically, you know, the way computers work, and most of us, I think, are familiar with that, but the way computers work, you have input and you have output. And, you know, the input can get more sophisticated and the output can get more sophisticated, but you have input and output. Input and then processing and then output. And so the input in this case is the person, the, you know, the person making the call or the person that's... And it sounded like, you know, you actually called this number, and despite the things, you know, it says, well, you made it, the reason we're calling is because you made an online application for healthcare insurance. That sounds suspiciously like healthcare.gov, doesn't it? So you have this live person that's calling this number, and then the person on the, you know, this machine, it's clearly a machine on the other end. The voice, the computer voice, is very good. I'll give it that. It's pretty good. But there are several telltale signs that give it away. The way it says the words exactly the same way, kind of over and over again. It could actually, they could do it with a recording, have a live person record, you know, a real woman record phrases into a computer, and then the computer just kind of picks which one it wants. Or it could be generating them right on the spot, possibly. But, and then they'll try to, a good system like that will even try to introduce a little variation so that it makes it seem more natural. But you can hear the system getting confused when he's trying to say, well, I just want to hear you say, I am not, or, you know, I am a real person, or I am not a robot, whatever it was he was trying to get the thing to say. It would not say it. It would not deviate, and it just kept getting confused. And so you had that delay, you know, this processing delay. The thing was trying to figure out what output to push out. It was confused because it a system like that, no matter how sophisticated the system is, it's looking for certain types of input so that it can process that input and then give you the output. And that's true with this system. It's certainly true with Google itself. You know, you got to give Google the right kind of input. And if you can figure out what kind of, you know, if you really want to do, you know, get good search results, if, you know, find what you're looking for, in other words, get the right output from Google, you've got to give Google the, you know, you kind of figure out, well, what is the best input that I can put into Google to get the output that, so that it can process and give me the output that I'm looking for. If you don't put in the right input on your end, then you're going to end up with bad processing and end up with bad output on the other end. It's not going to be as good as it could have been had you given it the right input. And so that's true with any computer system. I don't care how sophisticated it gets, or how, in this case, how good it sounds. It's still, I can tell that that's not a person. It's clearly a machine. And as such, it's a lousy salesperson. I'm sorry, but it's lousy. And if you had a bank of these things making calls and trying to read through the script, no matter how good you made the voice, if it can't listen and sort of respond to, because one of the things we're looking for when we interact with other people is how that person responds. How they, you know, we're actually looking for how they process our input, you know, to kind of put it in computer terms. If you think about it, we really are looking for how that person that we're talking to, if you have a face-to-face conversation, how is that person processing our input? Because our brains are computers, essentially. So we're sort of processing the input, and then we give you the output. And for human interaction, successful human interaction, that is of paramount importance. How is that other person processing? You know, kind of, and you can say, well, are we on the same wavelength or whatever? But it's really, it's a matter of, probably largely a matter of processing. And we can kind of tell what kind of computer we're dealing with, can't we? You know, if you look at, you know, we all have brains, we all have these big computers in our heads, and you're kind of able to, are you using the same language? Are you using the same terms? Is that person, are you really understanding each other? And a computer, no matter what, the computer cannot understand. It can't do it. I don't care what it says. And, it, you know, there's this so-called Turing test that, you know, that how would you tell whether a computer's, you know, there's this idea that how would you can tell if a computer is a, if it's a computer or a human being, if you in a blind test, if you're sort of asking it questions and carrying on like a, you know, like a chat conversation, and, you know, and if you were in a blind test, could you be able to tell whether the person was real or not on the other end? Well, if you ask the right questions, you're going to be able to tell pretty quickly, and that, you know, and so this Turing, I don't know exactly, I can't quote it exactly, but the idea is that if it can fool a majority of people into thinking that it's a human being, then, you know, then it's got artificial intelligence. Well, not necessarily. It's just maybe it's more sophisticated, but they're going to have to go a long way before they can get to the point where you can fool people, especially with sales. It might work with idiots. I don't know. There may be enough idiots out there that would do it to make it worthwhile. But I won't even deal with telemarketers, and I'll hardly talk to anybody on the phone. You know, unless I, you know, a lot of times I'll, you know, I just ignore the phone. I don't answer it, and you know, and I eventually I might if I want to, but a lot of times I don't. And or I might send the person a text message back or something. But I've just kind of gotten burned out on, I don't know, I've had jobs where I talked on the phone before. And again, you know, I've talked about this before. At one time I had this job where I worked in this driver relations department. Did that for, I don't know, probably a good year and a half before I got completely burned out on it. But I was on the phone with drivers all the time, and in order to communicate, you've kind of got to be, you know, both sides have to be able to listen. And sort of part of that is really seems to revolve around, are you processing what's being said? Are you processing what's being communicated? Are you able to sort of process that in the same way that the other person that you're dealing with processes it? And if you can't, then you start talking past each other. So this is an interesting thing, and I would say that this whatever this robot telemarketing thing is, so far it's a 100% fail, absolute fail. So. But on the other hand, you can, you know, like I was talking before, you can have these systems. And my mom, does, you know, even though she just doesn't want to do online banking, even though she's got all of, you know, every way of doing it if she wanted to, laptop computer plus the tablets, iPad, and so on and so forth. She could do it if she wanted to, but she just doesn't want to do it that way. She wants to do go through the voice prompts, and that's fine. If you call into a system that's got voice prompts, then you kind of know what it is. It's just a menu system. It's a verbal menu system. And that's really all this other thing is. It's trying to pretend to be something more, but it's just really a verbal menu system that's trying to make you think that it's a person on the other end. But it's patently obvious that it isn't. So anyway, thank you, Mark, for sending the link to that. That really gave me something to kind of, you know, kind of laugh about, and also, you know, providing me with a little bit of a launch pad, because in order for real communication to take place between people, successful communication to take place, each one of you on both ends of the conversation, or however many people are taking part in a conversation, you've got to be able to see that that person is genuinely processing what you're saying. And if they can, then the communication's been successful. But if they can't, then it's not been successful. And it's a total fail in this case when the thing's trying to sell something. It's just, it's not working. So, but it's very interesting nonetheless. So, in any case, think I better go ahead and cut this off. Hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.